This is edition number 2024 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday, the 3rd of July, 2026. Hello, you are listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today, we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 2nd of July, 2026. My name is Adrian Allenby, and my fellow readers are
Chris Allen,
Caroline Allen,
and Lorna Wilson.
On the news board today, this week, the sun will rise around 4:35 a.m. and will set at about 21:20 p.m.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes a tribute to Norfolk crochet legend, a maritime hero and author, a tale of local smugglers and a profile of a NASA astronaut.
But we begin with the main news items, which include action call on beach litter, the new life of a former mayor, a pub's planning application, and a grant award for a famous Norfolk broad. Let's start with those lead stories.
Strong action has been demanded after piles of rubbish mounted up on a North Norfolk beach over the weekend. The bins by Sea Pauling Beach were overflowing with rubbish, blowing across the promenade during the busy heatwave. The scenes of rubbish piling up has prompted calls for more to be done to keep our region's beaches free of rubbish. Calls have been made for the District Council to ensure bins are emptied regularly and for beachgoers to take more responsibility over their litter. It comes as North Norfolk District Council says it is monitoring the situation, has increased the number of bins in the region, and adjusted collection times to meet demand. Matthew Taylor, County Councillor for Sea Pauling, said, "I completely support calls to bring forward added collections during the busy summer months. It is important we ensure our beaches remain beautiful destinations. They are an asset that prop up our North Norfolk tourism economy. I hope the council will take action to ensure collections are more frequent and waste is removed before it piles up." Others argue the issue goes beyond council services, pointing to the behaviour of some beachgoers. Environmental charity Keep Britain Tidy echoed that message, advising that when bins are full, people should take their rubbish home rather than leave it behind. Councillor Callum Ringer had picked up 4 bags of rubbish from Cromer Beach during the heatwave. He said, "Take your litter home. It's not rocket science." The council provides literally hundreds of litter bins across the district. There is no excuse for leaving your rubbish on the beach. The issue has also sparked strong reactions on social media, and many people expressing anger and disappointment at the state of local beaches. One person said, "The rubbish this year is a joke. Why do people think it's okay to leave their rubbish behind on the beach like this?" Another said, "Why some people are so selfish and mindless is beyond me, ruining it for everyone, and the damage to the environment and the seas not even taken into consideration." Others called for a cultural shift in attitudes towards littering. One person said, "We are a shameful nation, and those of us who are fed up with it need to start a movement to call it out and wake people up." The calls came amid concerns that litter not only damages Norfolk's coastline visually, but also poses a threat to wildlife and a wider marine environment. With tourism playing a vital role in the local economy, there are increasing calls for a joint effort to protect the county's beaches during the peak summer months.
A seaside pub, which is at the centre of a planning row over beach hut dining pods, is now seeking permission to keep the structures. The Crown, on Sheringham seafront, installed the four brightly coloured huts earlier this year as part of a six-figure makeover that also revamped its interiors and lighting. When first put up, they caught North Norfolk District Council's attention, which said the sheds were breaching planning permission. The timber pods, which occupy three former parking spaces beside the pub's garden, are pitched in planning documents as cheerful additions that fit the promenade and help screen a tarmac-dominated car park from view. Stonegate, the chain which owns a pub, often have a temporary scaffolding stage for live music and mentions the current beach huts are more attractive and modest additions to the seaside setting. The design and access statement said, "The beach huts are not offensive, are in keeping with their coastal location. Therefore, we feel that these four beach huts should be seen as favourable additions to the pub grounds, as they do not detract from the setting or street scene of any of the surrounding buildings or locations." In its application to North Norfolk District Council, the pub also argues the huts are aimed at younger families, offering semi-private, sheltered outdoor dining. Despite losing parking spaces, the owners say enchanted outdoor seating is vital in keeping the venue popular with locals and visitors. The application said, "The huts will ultimately attract some younger families to the promenade walk area, improving footfall and increasing diversity within the area. The Crown has been a licensed pub since at least 1781 and has been rebuilt several times. The current building dates from 1935.
A former North Norfolk mayor, once dubbed the Norfolk Loo Lady, has swapped civic life on the coast for a remote farmhouse deep in the forests of northeast Poland. Emma Took, who previously served as North Norfolk District Councillor and Cromer Mayor, was known for her work championing accessible toilets. Mrs Took has now stepped away from politics entirely after relocating from Cromer to a small village outside Goldap, close to the Russian border, with her husband Martin and sons Mason and Bastian. The family now live in a converted Polish farmhouse more than 1,000 miles away from Norfolk. It took a three-day journey from Cromer to their new home, including a night sleeping in their car on a German autobahn. Mrs. Took said, "We are living in the middle of a field and forest with no close neighbours. We are amongst nature and have already seen pine martens, deer, hares and storks." The move follows a long-standing connection to the country through her husband, who previously lived in Poland for several years. Mrs. Took said she left politics feeling she had achieved what she set out to do, adding she wanted a new challenge away from public life. Now the family are working towards becoming as self-sufficient as possible, with plans for chickens, ducks, geese and turkeys, alongside vegetable growing and solar-powered living. The family are learning Polish and adapting to rural life in the Warmsko-Mazurki region, an area she says has very little English-speaking presence. Despite the change, she said, there are no regrets, adding that local perceptions of the border region are often misunderstood and that communities on both sides continue to live and trade normally. The family have launched a social media page, Life at Konieta Sweta, Life at the End of the World, documenting their new life. Mrs. Took, who previously helped oversee the rollout of Changing Places toilets across North Norfolk, joked she may yet adopt a new title, the Polish Loo Lady.
A grant of £453,115 will kickstart major restoration and access improvements at one of Norfolk's largest and most ecologically important broads. Norfolk Wildlife Trust, NWT, will use the funding from the National Lottery Heritage Fund to begin detailed planning for a programme of habitat restoration, floodplain reconnection and upgraded visitor facilities across the reserve. The project includes the restoration of 45 hectares of newly acquired wet grazing marsh at Whittles Marsh, creating improved conditions for breeding waders such as lapwing, snipe and redshank. The Trust also plans to reconnect 63 hectares of drained land within the reed beds to Hickling Broad, re-establishing a more natural and resilient floodplain. Water levels will be raised across a further 45 hectares of marsh, benefiting rare species including the bittern, bearded tit and Norfolk's iconic swallowtail butterfly. Alongside the ecological work, NWT is preparing a series of improvements for visitors. These include new viewpoints, upgraded paths, clearer signage, a welcome cabin and a changing places toilet. Plans also feature a new accessible circular walk and expanded boat trips and ferry services. Rachel Savage, NWT's Director of Development and Partnerships, said the funding would help secure the future of one of the Broad's most important landscapes. Thanks to National Lottery players, we are creating a future in which Hickling's habitats are protected, wildlife is thriving, and people are learning, exploring and enjoying the many benefits of being in nature, she said. We will focus on the urgent need to improve the resilience of the nature reserve's nationally important habitats in the face of climate change. This work is vital in supporting the special wildlife the Broads are famous for, including breeding crane, spoonbill, marsh harrier, bittern, lapwing and the iconic swallowtail butterfly long into the future. The grant will allow NWT to develop detailed plans over the next 18 months, enabling the charity to apply for further funding to deliver the first phase of the project in future years. Residents and visitors will be invited to share their views as proposals take shape.
Swimmers caught in a rip current were rescued at a beach over the weekend. The incident happened at Sea Pauling at around 5 p.m. on Sunday, and the RNLI crew were tasked with bringing three swimmers to safety. The lifeboat crew was alerted by HM Coast Guard and prepared to launch, but was stood down at 5:09 p.m. as no further assistance was required. The rescue was quickly brought under control by the RNLI lifeguards, with all three swimmers safely returned to the shore. A spokesman for Sea Pauling Independent Lifeboat said rip currents can be hard to spot and can quickly carry even strong swimmers away from the shore. If you find yourself caught in a rip current, remain calm, float if necessary, and swim parallel to the beach until you are clear of the current before heading back to shore, he said. If you see anyone in difficulty in the water, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
An initiative involving women in shaping Norfolk's health services has been shortlisted for a regional award. The Community Voices Women's Health Partnership led by Norfolk Community Foundation, is a finalist in the Partnership with People and Communities Award at the Norfolk and Suffolk Health and Care Awards 2026. The project has involved various charities, health organisations and grassroots groups in Norfolk and Waveney, focusing on women whose voices are often overlooked. Through workshops, community research and local engagement, the partnership has helped identify gaps in support and is working with health services to design improvements based on real-life experiences. Megan Pay from the Norfolk Community Foundation expressed delight at the recognition, stating the work is centred on women sharing their experiences. She highlighted the collaborative effect between local charities, health partnerships and communities in not only identifying areas for improvement, but also in redesigning services. Winners will be announced by wildlife presenter Michaela Stratton on July the 3rd at Rowley Mile Racecourse in Newmarket.
A coastal hotel has been named among the best in the country. Blakeney Hotel has been hailed for its incredible estuary views by writers at The Independent in its list of the 10 best UK coastal hotels for a summer getaway. The hotel is a privately owned, family-run hotel which has more than 60 bedrooms, a bar, restaurant and games room. The article highlights it as a great spot from which to explore this part of the UK's East Coast. Writers at The Independent also commend it for its range of activities and said, if the weather isn't on your side, there's plenty to do at the hotel. Take a dip in the heated swimming pool or make use of the extensive board game collection in the lounge. When you do head outside, the area is excellent for coastal walks, bird watching and boat trips to see the seals at Blakeney Point. The hotel was also recently included in the Telegraph's selection of the best places to stay along the country's coastline.
The top officer at Norfolk County Council has announced he is leaving his £209,000 a year post. Just over a month after Reform UK took control of County Hall, Tom McCabe, the authority's chief executive, is stepping down. It is understood that, officially, Mr. McCabe leaves at the end of this month, after nearly 8 years at the helm of Norfolk's biggest council. Staff at County Hall were informed of Mr. McCabe's departure on Thursday afternoon. Mr. McCabe was previously the council's executive director of community and environmental services. He said, "It is with mixed feelings that I have made this decision. Norfolk has been my family's home for the last 13 years, and we have felt welcome from day one. I have enjoyed working for the County Council and the many wonderful staff we have. It has been a real honour to lead them." In a brief statement, Council Leader David Bick said, "I'd like to thank Tom for his service to Norfolk and wish him well for the future." Mr. Bick's 39-strong group took control of the authority at May's election. The council was previously Conservative-controlled.
Our next few news stories include royal blessing for a young cattle farmer, the return of an open-air concert, schools gardening success, and green light for a new heritage trail.
A young cattle farmer was surprised to be handed a top trophy by the Princess Royal after winning a championship title close to her heart. Princess Anne toured the livestock rings during her visit to the Royal Norfolk Show and seemed particularly thrilled to present the Best of Breed trophy for the beef shorthorn cattle, as she is patron of the Beef Shorthorn Cattle Society. The winner was 20-year-old William Clark, based at Hevenningen between Norwich and Aylsham, where he keeps beef shorthorns as well as Simmentals and Limousins. He said he enjoyed his brush with royalty after claiming his trophy. "It was good," he said. "I knew she was coming, but we didn't expect to be winning overall champion. It was a bit of a shock. She was interested in what we were doing and where we are from and what we've got." He said he was pleased to win the trophy with a January 2025 born heifer, which is the daughter of his farm's first shorthorn cow, bought 5 years ago at the Yorkshire Show. "The trophy has got names going back to 1920, he said. "It has got a lot of top breeders' names on it, and a lot of people have nearly got their names on it. So it is great to get your name on that cup, and to have it presented by royalty makes it even better. We are fairly new to the job as well. It is our third year showing shorthorns now." He said the winning animal was ever so correct in her walking, style, with really good presence and really well shaped, adding, "She is the best." The beef shorthorn competition was one of three National Breed Society shows at this year's Royal Norfolk Show, along with belted Galloways and British Simmentals.
An open-air concert is returning this summer as it embarks on a new chapter. The one-day music event, Cromer Hall Concerts, is back on July the 18th, set against a backdrop of the 19th century hall and the North Norfolk coastline. It marks the first time the concerts will be managed in-house and by the family who run the estate, shifting the focus towards a more community-driven experience. Owner Huey Cable Manners, who runs the estate with his wife Ollie Curl, said, "We want this to be more than just a concert. It's about creating something people come back to every year, a proper summer tradition for Cromer." The hall is a Grade II listed Gothic Revival property, built in 1829, and is said to have inspired Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Hound of the Baskervilles. Attendees can bring their own food and drink, although local vendors and bars will also be available on site. This year's lineup includes high energy live acts such as Wild Boys, a 1980s tribute band, 29 Fingers, created by Ivan McCormack, who was an original member of U2, and Third Wheel, an up-and-coming band from South Africa. There's something special about watching live music in front of a house like this, Mr. Cabal Manners added. When you're not in a field in the middle of nowhere, you're part of something with history. The event also features off-road experiences and other family-friendly attractions. It comes as the estate is forging ahead with a multifaceted diversification drive in an effort to ensure it remains viable for future generations. A popular dog park was created this year, and a sculpture walk, featuring around 30 artworks by 15 sculptors, is due to open on July the 4th at an event also featuring live chainsaw carving. Tickets for the concert are still available via www.summerhubcromer.co.uk.
School Children has celebrated a major success at the Royal Norfolk Show after winning multiple awards in its school garden competition. Causton Primary Academy, alongside seven others, designed a garden inspired by Baroness Fluella Benjamin's memoir, Coming to England, recounting her journey from Trinidad as part of the Windrush generation. The theme was chosen by teacher Erin, with pupils already familiar with the book through their studies. Susie Black, a parent volunteer and professional garden designer who supported the project, said, "The story made it a natural choice. The finished garden aimed to create a positive, uplifting and celebratory atmosphere, combining 6 shortlisted designs produced by the pupils. "It was very much a collaborative team effort," said Mrs. Black. "Every single child contributed. Contributions ranged from reception pupils crafting wooden windrush figures to Year 6 students producing signs carrying positive messages. The project was supported by sponsor Scrapbox, which supplied repurposed materials used throughout the design and Edgefield nurseries. In the lead-up to the show, a group of pupils, Reggie, Georgia, Lola, Hattie, Lily and Hugo, aged between 5 and 10, helped assemble the display on site. They did the school really proud," Mrs. Black added. "Causton's efforts were recognised with a gold award in the judges' category, shared with one other school. They also received BBC Radio Norfolk's Showstopper Award and won the public vote decided by visitors during the event. It's lovely to get a gold from the judges, but recognition from the public is really special," said Mrs. Black. She also highlighted the wider value of such initiatives, saying they help children build confidence, teamwork, and creativity. She added that without volunteers and support from the school's Friends Association, something like this doesn't happen.
A new heritage attraction designed to encourage people to explore Aylsham's historic town centre has been given the green light. The Heritage Snail Trail project, which will see a series of decorative mollusk-based plaques installed across key buildings in the town, has been approved by Broadland District Council. In a planning statement, it said, "The intention of the project is to create an interactive experience that combines history, culture, and technology in a family-friendly way. Buildings around Market Place, Red Lion Street, Mill Row, and Borough Road, such as the Black Boys Hotel, are set to feature on the trail. The plaques are intended to form part of a self-guided walking route linking significant historic sites across the town centre, encouraging visitors to explore local landmarks and discover more about Aylsham's past. The scheme forms part of wider efforts to boost footfall in the market town and celebrate cultural heritage. There will be a giant version of a gastropod painted by the town's own Mick Richardson as the centrepiece of the trail. The project has been developed as part of Norfolk County Council's Love Your Market Town funding initiative, which supports schemes aimed at boosting high street vitality and community engagement. According to planning documents, heritage officers were consulted and gave an informal view that the proposed locations were suitable, subject to formal approval for fixing and installation methods. Supporters of the scheme say the trail will help strengthen Aylsham's appeal as a visitor destination, linking heritage interpretation with independent businesses in the town centre. It is hoped the project will encourage longer visits and increased spending in local shops and cafes. The launch of the trail will coincide with the Great Aylsham Snail Race at the beginning of August.
A nature photography competition is set to return, capturing the beauty of wildlife through the lens. Organised by the Norfolk Wildlife Trust, NWT, the contest is free to enter and open to all ages and experience levels. Photographers are invited to submit images taken in the past year that showcase nature in Norfolk. Entries can feature birds, mammals, marine life, insects, plants, fungi, and landscapes, whether photographed on an NWT reserve or in a garden. The deadline to enter is July the 31st. Martin Cowley, whose photo of a zebra spider was included in the 2025 competition exhibition, said, "I'm a great believer in the power of photography to motivate and inspire people to care for nature and to take positive action to ensure that the natural world is preserved for future generations to enjoy. And where better to do that than in the place we call home?" One winning image will be selected for each month of NWT's 2027 calendar, with other highly commended entries displayed in exhibitions. Entrants can also submit their hopes for the future of Norfolk's wildlife as part of NWT's 100-year anniversary celebrations.
An American fast food chain could open a restaurant in Norfolk as part of its expansion into the UK. Houston TX Hot Chicken, a fried chicken chain known for its spicy sandwiches and waiver-only heat level, plans to open 50 restaurants across the UK over the next 3 years. The expansion forms part of a partnership with Pizza Express, which will serve as the master franchise for the brand's launch in Europe. Spice levels at the restaurant range from mild to its extreme "Houston, we have a problem" option, which requires customers to sign a waiver before ordering. Paula McKenzie, chief executive of Pizza Express, said, "We're thrilled to be adding Houston Hot Chicken to our house of brands, bringing something truly distinctive to the UK market. Bold flavour, real energy, an experience that stands apart. This is chicken unlike you've seen it before." The business currently operates 29 locations across 8 US states, with more 100 franchised sites already sold. Both Pizza Express and TX Hot Chicken have been contacted for comments about location plans.
A North Norfolk care home has raised over £460 for the Alzheimer's Society after hosting a fundraising event in support of people living with dementia. Care UK's Heath Lodge in Holt raised £467.50 as part of the Alzheimer's Society's Forget Me Not appeal, which runs throughout June. Care home residents and team members helped prepare for the event by creating fascinators and crocheted forget-me-not flowers, the symbol of dementia awareness. Locals were invited to attend with a tombola and a raffle, helping to boost fundraising efforts. Guests also enjoyed Prosecco and homemade scones served with jam and cream. Hazel Madden, home manager at Heath Lodge, said, "We had a wonderful time at our fundraising event and we're thrilled with the final amount raised. Dementia care is a big part of what we do here at Heath Lodge and we're always looking for ways to help create a more dementia-friendly community by supporting local carers and raising awareness of the condition. We'd like to say a special thank you to the local community for joining us on the day and for everyone who donated to the fundraiser. The money raised will support Alzheimer's Society's work, helping people affected by dementia and their families."
It may be the hottest weeks of the year so far, but one attraction is celebrating success for its winter magic. The Thursford Christmas Spectacular has been crowned Best Christmas Experience in the country for the third year in a row. The show, held near Fakenham, has entertained audiences for 48 years with a three-hour production of music, dance, comedy and specialty acts, and attracts more than 110,000 visitors each year. Ben Allen of the Thursford Christmas Spectacular said, "What an amazing achievement to be crowned Best Christmas Experience in the country. the Thursford Christmas Spectacular continues to be bigger and better every year, and we're thrilled audiences feel the same. To be awarded once is a great achievement, but for three consecutive years is something special. A special thank you to all those who voted, but also to our incredible team, which continues to make this Christmas Spectacular truly unique for our customers. It won the title at the Group Leisure and Travel Magazine Awards and was one of only three finalists from the East Anglia region. It was up against attractions including Blenheim Palace, Longleat, Beaver Castle, Salisbury Cathedral, the National Memorial Arboretum and Wadston Manor.
You are listening to edition number 2024 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday the 3rd of July 2026. Still to come, there are items about plans for a new car park, a Care Homes National Award, and, of course, the Mardler magazine supplement. But before all that,
some local events and letters.
Sunday the 5th of July, book and CD sale at 9 a.m. Help us to raise funds for the running and upkeep of our delightful Pilgrim Shelter. Pilgrim Shelter, Loop Road, Church Street, Trimmingham.
On Sunday the 5th of July is the Swayfield Trunch and Bradfield Extravaganza at 12 noon until 6 p.m, cost of £3. Swayfield Hall's Fete is a very, very big and full of fun garden party with open gardens, licensed bar, live music, chakra readings, antiques valuations with Mike Hicks, barbecue, Asian delights and the fun dog. Swayfield Hall, near North Walsham. Contact Tim Payne, that's P-A-Y-N-E, at mac.com or call 01692 402 624.
On Tuesday the 7th of July, Wilder Communities Tackling Gracilla Helmsley at 10 a.m. and free entry, norfolkwildlifetrust.org.uk. Join NWT for a practical workshop on spotting and managing this invasive panda plant. Everything you want to know but are too afraid to ask. Mulbarton Village Hall. Info at norfolkwildlifetrust.org.uk on 01603 625 540.
Wednesday the 8th of July, Wilder Communities at 10 a.m, cost £7.86. norfolkwildlifetrust.org.uk. Join our workshop and learn a simple framework for surveying pond condition and how to create a pond management plan. Brisley Village Hall, Gately Road, Brisley near Dereham. Info at norfolkwildlifetrust.org.uk, 01603 625540.
And now for your letters.
Pavements embarrass me. I'm a wheelchair user and live in Sheringham. Now in the summer season, we have an influx of tourists. So many people complain about the state of our pavements, and I agree. I do feel embarrassed about our pavements. I'm fed up with navigating dog feces, chewing gum, and ground-in food. Whilst our streets are kept free of rubbish, the pavements really do need a clean. When I first moved here, our pavements were seasonally cleaned. I understand money is a problem for our local authorities, but surely it's not very nice for locals and holidaymakers to see. Because of my situation, I often find my wheels unfortunately pick up not very pleasant things. Kimberly Stevens, Sheringham.
Where are our polling cards? Having received polling cards, most of the residents of Norfolk will now know that there is an election for the Police and Crime Commissioner on the 16th of July. However, what most Cromer residents will not know that there is also an election for Cromer Town Council in the week before. This is because this council has chosen not to send out polling cards for this election. The result is that it is likely that only postal voters will be the only ones that are aware there will be an election, let alone who are the candidates. In my view, this does not serve democracy well. There are also questions to ask why Cromer has two elections on consecutive Thursdays. Was it really against human wit to save costs by having these two elections on the same date? The Reverend Dr. Mike Bossingham, Corner Street, Cromer. We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where we hear about a Norfolk crochet legend, an 18th century smuggler's tale, a maritime hero, an author, and an introduction to a NASA astronaut.
Smuggling was big business in 18th century Norfolk. Chris Armstrong reveals all in the Norfolk Magazine of the 17th of June 2026. Smuggling was rife around the English coast. A blind eye was almost universally turned to the activities of the smugglers. Theirs was probably seen as a victimless crime, except, of course, for the treasury, but not many cared about that. In North Norfolk, though, it was a far from victimless crime. The goods smuggled may have been welcomed, but the practices of the smugglers smack more of Al Capone's 1930s Chicago than 18th century Hunstanton. It is perhaps ironic that their motivation in both cases was similar. The provision of prohibited liquor in the United States and duty-free liquor in North Norfolk. The smugglers operated in gangs, and pretty vicious gangs too. One of the most prominent gang leaders was a King's Lynn man called Thomas Franklin. By dint of ruthless coercion, organisational skill, and sheer physical presence, he was to become one of the most successful gang leaders in the trade. He was truly a self-made man, and he was to become the bitter enemy and in time the nemesis of the hero of this story, Robert Bliss. Bliss was working for the excise office in Winchester when, in the spring of 1779, he was offered a promotion to become the superintendent of excise based at Wells. Like Franklin, Bliss, 32 years old and single, was a man with a reputation, in his case for dedication to his duty, and especially for physical courage in facing down gangs. Franklin would not have welcomed his appointment. Bliss went to work with a will. His new local colleagues were, perhaps from experience, a little less enthusiastic about targeting the activities of Franklin, except with the support of a large squad of dragoons, and Bliss made contact with the nearest troop billeted at Holt. For the next 2 years or so, Bliss scored success after success. Franklin must have been furious. Not only was his income diminishing, but also his reputation. Bliss was proving to be in a different league to those excise officials he had had to deal with before. Smarter, braver, better organised, and with military backup, he was a formidable opponent. But Franklin was blessed with a degree of cunning and set up a sting for Bliss. On Boxing Day, Bliss and his team were enjoying a belated Christmas feast when he was approached by an informer he had known before and therefore trusted. The gist of the informer's message was that there was a large amount of contraband hidden at specific sites in Thornham, in the heart of Franklin territory, and that on December the 31st, Franklin himself would be away in King's Lynn, celebrating his cousin's wedding. Bliss swallowed the story whole. It was a trap. Franklin was not in King's Lynn, but in Thornham at the head of a group of 200 or so locals, intent on destroying Bliss. In the ensuing melee, Franklin grabbed Bliss's reins. He began to whip Bliss furiously across the face and in the eye. Bliss survived, but was a spent force. Franklin had got his revenge. Neither were the same again. Franklin survived his trial for assault, but his credibility had gone and he became just a minor player in the smuggling game. The outturn for Bliss was worse. His performance deteriorated to the extent that first having moved him, the excise service dismissed him, without pay, without compensation, and without pension. Appalling treatment of a man of courage, of determination, and imbued with a great sense of duty.
The Life of Naval Hero and Novelist Frederick Marryat by Chris Armstrong, Norfolk Magazine, May 2026. That Norfolk is the prime choice for a peaceful retirement for many from other parts of the country is nothing new. As long ago as 1843, naval hero and novelist Frederick Marryat came to live in Langham, near the North Norfolk coast. Frederick was one of 15 children born to Joseph Marryat and his American wife, and one of 8 who survived to adulthood. He seems to have been a restless child, more than once running away from a school he hated to attempt to go to sea. Eventually, his father got the message and, at the age of 14, Frederick became a volunteer and later a midshipman aboard HMS Imperius under the command of one of the most colourful commanders in British naval history, Lord Cochrane. Cochrane's courage, disregard for convention and imaginative daring were to prove the inspiration, some say believe, for the much fictional characters as C.S. Forrester's Hornblower and Patrick O'Brien's Jack Aubrey. As an inspiration to write of the sea, Marryat could not have had a better model. Despite playing a major role in numerous actions under Cochrane's command, Marryat was not totally typical of a naval officer's class. He had a rough introduction to the Navy and was bullied as a midshipman. He survived and flourished without losing a sense of decency. He was an outspoken critic of impressment as a means of recruiting and an unenthusiastic flogger. He was both intelligent and thoughtful. Despite all his qualities, he was not universally popular with the Admiralty. In the light of that unpopularity and indifferent health, he had an astonishingly successful career, eventually making post-captain in 1825. As his career progressed, Marryat became increasingly interested in the idea of writing. Long periods at sea presented this opportunity, and write Marryat did. Like Jane Austen, he was initially published anonymously, but his anonymity was relatively brief. Various officers recognised incidences in his stories and caricatures of themselves. In 1824, Marryat was a fortunate beneficiary of two substantial estates, that of his father and his uncle Samuel. The combined value of these estates was about £38 million in today's money. Although married and with a family, he became something of a socialite. He was popular in London, combining with his wealth and glamour of his heroic service, an exceptional and fertile brain, the wit of a young Wilde, and the bonhomie of a 19th century Bertie Wooster. Amongst his friends was the Duke of Sussex, a literary royal who gave him a lease of Sussex House as a home. On one convivial evening in 1830, he agreed with a casual acquaintance to exchange his superb London property for 1,000 acres of farmland near Langham. His wife, Catherine, didn't share his enthusiasm, and they separated after 24 years of marriage and 11 children, of whom 8 survived to adulthood. In 1843, he moved to Langham, became a magistrate and a deputy lieutenant. There was perhaps the occasional twinge of nostalgia for his more racy London life, and as he grew older, his writing focused less on his naval background and more on stories for children. Some of his came to live with him in Norfolk. His sons, however, followed him into the Navy, the elder dying shortly before Marriott himself in 1847. Already unwell, this further sadness possibly hastened his decline, and he died the following year.
A tribute to a legendary Norfolk creative by Yolanda Rocklin, Norfolk Magazine, May 2026. On April the 9th, family, friends and a far-reaching creative community said their final goodbye to Sue Matton, one of Norfolk's most cherished creatives. A gifted crochet designer and founder of the Mercerie, Sue's passing after a swift and devastating battle with Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD, has left many in shock. Her loss is felt not only locally, but across the wider crochet community she so lovingly built through her work, her teaching, and her generosity of spirit. Sue was, above all, a remarkable creative force. Her journey began in the 1980s with a degree in knitwear design, followed by a master's at Norwich University of the Arts, then known as the Norwich School of Design, and a teaching qualification that would shape decades of influence. She went on to teach in the Art and Design Department at City College, Norwich, for more than 20 years, inspiring countless students with her knowledge, encouragement, and passion for textiles. Alongside this, she contributed to the MA Textiles Programme at Norwich University of Arts between 2004 and 2010, helping to nurture the next generation of designers. In around 2012, Sue took volunteer redundancy and channeled her energy into a new venture, the Mercerie. What began as an online yarn shop quickly evolved into a platform for her own knitting and crochet designs, an extension of her creative voice that resonated with a growing audience drawn to her distinctive style. Teaching remained central to Sue's life. She travelled across Norfolk and throughout the UK, hosting workshops in craft shops and creative spaces where she shared her skills and encouraged others to explore their creativity. These sessions were about far more than technique. They were welcoming, inclusive spaces where people connected through a shared love of making, guided by Sue's warmth and her incredible knowledge of crochet and colour. When the COVID-19 pandemic brought in-person teaching to a halt, Sue adapted with characteristic creativity and openness. She continued to design with the same originality, creating works such as Homage to the Granny Square, Wallflowers, Tessellation Nation, and most recently, Ogies, a project she was sadly unable to complete. my own little school of needlecraft will carry on teaching beginners crochet in Sue's memory, opening the door for new generations of makers to discover the joy of crochet. Meanwhile, Jess Gallagher, Sue's former assistant, is working closely with Sue's family to continue the nursery, ensuring that her work and vision remain accessible. Through her online courses, Sue's teaching will continue to inspire and guide countless others into her colourful crochet world.
Jackie Goddard meets astronaut Luca Parmitano, the first European crew member on NASA's Artemis Moon program, from the Times of June 12, 2026. When he penned an open letter to his daughters a month after returning from a space mission that nearly killed him, Luca Parmitano aimed for a message that would endure beyond childhood. It was not about himself or his reflections on mortality following a brush with death. It was about living with curiosity, courage, and a sense of responsibility. The world is incredibly beautiful. I saw it from afar, and now I have proof, he wrote in 2014. This is the only world we have, and it contains something extremely precious, our future. The future, just like the world, does not belong to you, yet it is in your hands. It may seem infinite, but it is only infinitely fragile. 12 years later, Parmitano, aged 49, has become the first European Space Agency astronaut assigned to the NASA-led Artemis program, which aims to return crew to the surface of the Moon in 2028 as a stepping stone to Mars. But humanity's push towards a future beyond Earth must not come at the expense of its responsibility for the planet it calls home, he urges. We need now to protect our planet, because it is our only refuge. As a space agency, we're not looking for Planet B, said Parmitano. The prospect of sustaining human life on Mars is not really in our capability. Not in this lifetime, nor the next few generations. So what we try to pass on is the necessity to use science, to push our lawmakers and our decision makers to strong, hard reforms that may be unpopular, but that are necessary to protect the only planet we have right now. Next year's Artemis 3 mission to low Earth orbit will test rendezvous and docking procedures between NASA's Orion crew capsule and two lunar landing spacecraft built by SpaceX and Blue Origin. In the audience at Johnson Space Center, Houston, as NASA announced Parmitano among the four-man crew, were his teenage daughters, Sarah and Maya, and his second wife, Marta, whom he married in his native Sicily in 2023. They are as excited as I am. They understand my job. They understand that it is my lifestyle, and also it is a great passion. They are the spark that ignites it, he said. But at the same time, they know that it is bigger than what I have done in the past. As a test pilot in the Italian Air Force, and a veteran of two previous space missions, his proven ability to handle pressure was key to his selection. It was somewhere over the English Channel in 2005 that Parmitano first got to draw on the art of cool-headedness in the face of a life-or-death emergency. Streaking 100 feet above the waves in an Italian Air Force ground attack aircraft during a NATO exercise, he struck a stork, destroying the jet's canopy, damaging the cockpit, and wiping out critical flight data and navigation instruments. Covered in feathers and flying blind, he turned the aircraft towards the coastline and calmly radioed colleagues, replaying in his head the mantra, aviate, navigate, communicate. He limped to a safe landing in Belgium, relying on his peripheral vision. That checklist was invaluable again in 2013 when, during a spacewalk, his helmet filled with 1.5 litres of water from a backed-up cooling system, covering his eyes, nose and ears, and coming close to drowning him. He used his safety tether to haul himself back inside, unable to see and relying instead on touch, calmly narrating his predicament to his colleagues, though unable to hear them. Once inside the airlock, he had to wait several minutes for it to repressurise before his crewmates could open the internal door to reach him and remove his helmet. I understand this is not a lunar landing or even a lunar flyby. It may disappear in the big story of lunar exploration, he said, but that's not why I'm an astronaut. I'm an astronaut for the contribution. This is a very interesting mission. We may not go to the moon, but our mission is fun. It's challenging, it's complex, and we're looking forward to everything that's lying ahead.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions.
Returning to the news. A penultimate selection of articles include approval for a new car park, national award for a Norfolk care home, dance music's return to historic hall, and a new theatre company for the county.
Plans for a new car park and transport hub aimed at easing pressure on a Norfolk market town have been approved. Aylsham is set to gain a 62-space parking hub, including 5 accessible bays and cycle parking for 10 bikes, as parts of effort to reduce congestion in the town centre. The scheme will also see solar panel canopies installed above some parking bays to generate electricity. It forms part of the approved 250 home development currently under construction on the same road. Plans have been approved with 9 conditions, which included the development cannot install external lighting without further planning permission. The condition is to ensure that the development protects the nocturnal character and neighbour amenity and avoids habitat fragmentation. The site, formerly part of the long-closed Aylsham Lodge Hotel, has in recent years been used as a construction car park. Planning documents say the development will relieve pressures on the town centre, but for some living nearby, the approval has sparked alarm. One resident has raised fears over the height and impact of the solar canopies, as well as potential fire risks from electric vehicles parked beneath them spreading to nearby homes. They also warned of possible light pollution affecting sleep and stargazing, alongside concerns about noise, privacy and air quality. They said Canham Consulting has referred to the factors they have considered, but at no point have they considered the residents and the disruption caused by construction, noise pollution, removal of views, and poor air quality. Shameful. Canham Consulting said approved EV chargers will be used and fire-fighting water supplies will be nearby. They included the EV charger bays are located near the road and away from the residential property boundary. The housing scheme and car park were lodged by developers Norfolk Homes and Saffron Homes.
Home care provider Caremark North Norfolk and Great Yarmouth is celebrating after winning a major award. The company has won Best Startup Home Care Employer 2026 at the Stars of Social Care Stars Awards. Cowan Mosei, Managing Director, said, "To win Best Startup Home Care Employer 2026 so soon after opening is a fantastic achievement and one we're incredibly proud of. This award reflects the hard work, dedication and care our team delivers every day across North Norfolk and Great Yarmouth." The award comes as a new partnership aims to improve support for people making difficult decisions about care and finances. Financial planners Smith and Pinching have teamed up with home care provider Caremark North Norfolk and Great Yarmouth to offer joined-up guidance for families across the region. The collaboration, focused on North Norfolk and Great Yarmouth, is designed to help clients navigate the complexities of later life planning by bringing together financial and care advice. The partnership is intended to help individuals better understand care funding options and remain independent at home. Phil Beck, Chartered Financial Planner at Smith & Pinching, said, "We're increasingly supporting clients with decisions that involve both financial planning and potential care needs. We're delighted to be partnering with Caremark, as it will enable us to provide more complete guidance, helping clients understand both the financial implications and what care looks like in practice." Smith & Pinching, one of the largest firms of chartered financial planners in the east of England, have been offering independent financial advice since 1973. The partnership will be delivered by the company's North Norfolk team, which includes specialists in holistic financial planning, later life advice, mortgages, and long-term business planning. Caremark North Norfolk and Great Yarmouth will provide the care expertise to complement Smith & Pinching's financial planning services. Mr. Mosei said, "As a local business, it is important to us to work alongside trusted organisations that share our values. We're excited to be partnering with Smith & Pinching and look forward to supporting more people and families across North Norfolk together."
A night of dance music, live orchestra and iconic vocals is gearing up for its return to Norfolk. Classic Ibiza returns to Blickling Estate on August the 1st, promising its best ever show in its 11-year history. Lisa Ward, owner and promoter of Classic Ibiza, said, "If our rehearsals are anything to go by, Classic Ibiza this year is going to blow our Blickling crowd away. Because we've upped the orchestra to 45 musicians and extended the number of tracks featuring LCGC's incredible vocals, the symphonic wall of sound coming from the stage will be on a whole new level. Even the crowd favourites, tracks that we know our Norfolk audience love, have so much more depth. It's like hearing them for the very first time." The Urban Soul Orchestra, USO, DJ Crystal Rocks and the London Community Gospel Choir, LCGC, will take to the stage under the direction of conductor Stephen Hussey. USO will perform more tracks than ever, before including 8 new orchestrations. Miss Ward said, "All the new tracks that we're performing this year sound amazing, but for me there's one absolute standout. The strings and horns on Todd Terry's iconic Something Going On are so epic and lush. Talk about kicking off the dance set in style." Other new tracks include Left Field's release The Pressure, Denise Ferrer's Hey Hey, and Three Drive's Grease 2000. Classic Ibiza debutante DJ Mira will also deliver fresh performances as part of the extended 5.5-hour programme. The Arrival Lounge set begins at 5:30 p.m, followed by a chill-out set with DJ Myra and USO at 6:45 p.m. The Party Starter set begins at 7:30 p.m. The Ghost Ship Sundowner set featuring USO, DJ Crystal Rocks and LCGC starts at 8 p.m. A Deep House set with DJ Crystal Rocks runs at 9 p.m. before the main dance set at 9:30 p.m. For tickets, visit classicibiza.co.uk/blickling.
A new theatre company is bringing creative opportunities to North Norfolk for adults and young people. Mud and Moon Theatre Company has been launched by professional actor and screenwriter Laura Guest and train actor and qualified teacher Amy Mallett, with a focus on building confidence, creativity and community through drama. Their first project, A Play in 5 Days, is a summer theatre week for young people aged 11 to 16, running from August the 17th to 21st at Upper Sheringham Village Hall and Garden. Participants will work together to create and perform original short plays, supported by drama games, character development exercises and guided script writing. As Guest said, "I put off going professional for over 10 years because I didn't know where to start. I loved Amdram, but that desire for more was always burning. I want to help make the industry a little more transparent for others with the acting collective and, of course, have lots of fun bringing the children's stories to life this summer." The week will conclude with outdoor picnic performance for families and friends. The programme costs £150 per child, with an early bird rate of £135 until July the 5th. Alongside the summer week, the company is offering a free taster evening for the Acting Collective, its adult project, on Sunday, July the 12th at East Runton Village Hall. The Acting Collective includes two groups: The Craft, led by Ms. Mallett, for adults looking to build confidence through acting, and The Professionals, led by Ms. Guest, for working and aspiring actors. Ms. Mallett said, "Mud and Moon is a hub and home where children, young people and adults can connect through creativity." The co-founders describe the summer project as just the beginning, with plans for a 3-day October half-term programme for 7 to 10-year-olds already in development. Full details are available at lauraguest.co.uk/mudandmoon.
The owners of a cafe in a North Norfolk town have shared their secret to success just a year after opening. East 11, the dog-friendly cafe at the top of the gangway in Cromer, is celebrating 1 year since opening its doors this July. And already it has made its mark as more than just a place for homemade toasties and coffee. Owned and run by John and Lana Bosley, the cafe has become a community hub and a showcase for small businesses in the town. "From the very start, we wanted East 11 to be more than a cafe," Mrs. Bosley said. Having lived in the area for over 20 years, I have seen how important community is and how small businesses only thrive when they work together. People come here and tell us it is their safe space, somewhere they can relax, chat, and feel part of something special. We wanted to take that sense of connection and extend it to local makers, giving them a platform to share their work while our customers enjoy a toastie or coffee. It is incredible to see the way our small business community is growing together. Since opening, East 11 has provided a platform for 6 local makers and artisans to display and sell their work. With a blend of comfort, community spirit, and support for local enterprise, their aim is to help reshape the role of cafes in the wider town economy. The cafe features 3 additional rooms on 2 floors, which host shelves and displays for nearby shops and creatives, from upcycled gift retailers to wildlife photographers. It is just a short walk from Cromer Beach and Pier, making it a natural stop for visitors exploring the town.
A classic ghost story will come to life this summer in a new immersive stage production. The Turn of the Screw, a psychological thriller written by Mike Poulton and based on Henry James' novella, will be performed at Wolverton Hall in Norfolk from July the 8th to July the 12th. This new adaptation blends professional and community actors and is set to unfold through the stately homes, grand interiors and grounds. Sheringham Little Theatre is producing the show, which will see the audience follow the action through rooms and gardens as night falls. The project sprang from Mr. Poulton visiting Sheringham Little Theatre and chatting to the Wolverton show director, Katie Thompson, who asks for advice on adapting the show to take on tour. Mr. Poulton said, "I've wanted to do it as a challenge ever since I was at university, so when Kate asked me for suggestions on which adaptation would be best for the hall, I said I'd do a new one. It's a project close to my heart, trying to capture the original theme of keeping the audiences guessing whether the ghosts are real or imaginary. I'm really excited to see how the play fits into the Wolverton setting, but also hope to further adapt it for commercial theatres." The cast is led by Rose Quinton as a governess. Miss Quinton said, "This a horror story too, and I always feel the real horror is in the humans rather than the ghosts and apparitions. I am really excited about doing this show in such a stunning setting, starting at dusk." The cast also includes Rachel Cummins as housekeeper Mrs. Gross, alongside 2 pairs of young actors, Tom and Elizabeth Heath, and Alfie Thomas and Alexa Mistorius, alternating as Flora and Miles. Debbie Thompson, director of Sheringham Little Theatre, said, "We are thrilled with this collaboration with Wolverton, honoured to be working with such an illustrious writer as Mike, and excited by our cast, which mixes professional talent with community actors." Tickets are available at wolverton.co.uk.
Several rare birds, often described as almost mythical, have been spotted in North Norfolk. The nightjars were captured on Kelling Heath near Holt by wildlife photographer Adam Spruce, who is from Cromer, earlier this month. The site is one of the country's few breeding sites for this elusive bird, with guided nighttime walks to get a glimpse of them. Mr. Spruce noted that it is very rare to see the animals during the day due to their nocturnal sleeping tendencies, which is also gives them their name. The Norfolk Wildlife Trust says the birds can be identified by keeping an ear out for a churring call and looking for a cryptic bark-like plumage, flat head and small bill. Nightjars arrive in the UK between April and May from Africa, predominantly from the Democratic Republic of Congo, to raise their young. They are described as almost mythical by the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds due to their camouflage, making them invisible to most in the daytime. Forestry England recognises the nightjar as a nationally rare bird, and they are classified as an amber species under the Red List for birds.
The Norfolk coast has been praised as one of the UK's best summer staycation destinations. Travel discovery site Rome to Rio said searches for coastal getaways have surged over the past fortnight, with Cornwall topping the list and Brighton and Bournemouth also proving popular. While the biggest attention has gone to the south coast, Norfolk still made the top 10, with 334 searches in the last 14 days, showing it remains a firm favourite for holidaymakers. The county's appeal lies in its wide beaches, big skies and easygoing coastal charm, offering a quieter alternative to some of the UK's busier hotspots. Popular beaches recently praised by critics include Holcombe, which was named as one of the most startlingly beautiful white sand beaches by writers at The Telegraph. Norfolk was also recently highlighted as one of the best places in the UK for a holiday closer to home by the writers at Condé Nast Traveller. They specifically praised North Norfolk, describing its coast and beaches as the main appeal.
Our last few articles cover the latest on that bus shelter row, plans for a new hotel under scrutiny, the summer heatwave brings out the crowds, and work starts on a new dentist's.
A 1950s bus shelter that became the centre of a fierce community battle has been condemned to demolition after councillors chose to press ahead with a £580,000 travel hub scheme. Sheringham Town Council has voted to approve the demolition of the town's beloved bus shelter in a decision that reversed the result of a historic protest victory. The shelter, which sits in front of a patch of land known as Autendorf Green, has been saved in December after locals staged a 9-day sit-in. During this time, they braved freezing temperatures to block Norfolk County Council, NCC, demolition crews from moving in. The plans were then thrown out following an explosive meeting which saw further protests and clashes between councillors and the public. Last week, however, the Town Council announced a shock revival of the plans. It said the standoff had left it in breach of contract with NCC and in violation of covenants with North Norfolk Railway, which owns land around the site. Buses have been unable to stop in the town centre since December, which the council said had hit local businesses and cut off some mobility-impaired locals entirely. This led to the authority putting forward several plans to revive the bus shelter, but it ultimately recommended the councillors approve the demolition plan. Other options that were being considered, including modernising the current shelter while keeping the mural, and another which suggested moving the shelter brick by brick to somewhere else in town. More than 60 people turned up at the meeting in a sign of the feeling in the town about ripping down its bus shelter. However, councillors voted 8-5 to approve the demolition plans. Sue Brisbane, the council's mayor, said, "This was not an easy decision and councillors have carefully considered all viewpoints. Our priority must be to restore a safe, accessible town centre bus stop and support our local businesses and community as a whole. Others criticised the decision, however. Liz Withington, Cromer's county councillor, said, "It is very disappointing that Sheringham Town Council have failed to challenge Norfolk County Council's obstructive behaviour in refusing to consider wider options which would enable the shelter to stay, and an excellent project to come forward." John Dory, a member of the Town Council, said, "Sheringham Town Council has been backed into a corner and now it's checkmate. NCC has failed to listen to our community and a massive opportunity to improve road safety and bus travel in our town. Demolition is expected to cost £3,950 plus VAT, and work is expected to begin in early 2027.
Plans for a Premier Inn on a former factory site in North Walsham are still under scrutiny at North Norfolk District Council. The proposals have already been revised twice for the 81-bed hotel and are still being probed. If approved, it would be the town's first branded hotel and be on a part of the former Crane Fraunhofer factory site off Cromer Road. The main objection is from Norfolk County Council as lead local flood authority, LLFA, over the proposed sustainable drainage system. Concerns raised include the current plans not being able to properly manage heavy rain and increasing flood risk on or around the site. A recent document in the application suggests there should be more above-ground vegetated sustainable drainage system features to boost original storage and deliver extra amenity and biodiversity benefits. The drainage proposals have already been revised twice, but the LLFA objection still stands. Specialists are now working on further changes while considering direct talks with the flood authority. The District Council's conservation and design team have raised concerns about how the hotel would sit in its surroundings. These are not technical reasons to block a decision, but will be weighed in the overall planning judgment once the drainage issue is resolved. Whitbread commissioned research suggests Premier Inn guests spend an average of £143 per room per night, with around £71 typically spent within 2 miles of the hotel, underlining the potential economic boost for the town. The research said guests could be expected to spend up to £3.5 million per year, with £1.8 million estimated to be put into the town's local economy annually. Whitbread PLC, owners of Premier Inn, said the hotel could create around 20 jobs. The site was previously home to the former Crane Fraunhofer factory, which had manufactured trailers and containers and was a key employer in the area.
Cromer was buzzing with life as temperatures soared and visitors made the most of the summer heatwave last Friday on the hottest day of the year. Beaches, cafes and ice cream shops were packed with people enjoying the sunshine. Business had been booming for Cathy Lynch, who runs Brief Stop Ice Cream Shop on the promenade. She said, "It has been a very busy today. The weather increases business by 100%. Relaxing on a deck chair on the beach, Claire Drayton said, "Me and my husband have a place here, so we come up here a lot. It was a lovely coincidence that the weekend we decided to come up was the hottest weekend. We will be spending it mainly on the beach." For Kimberly from Diss, the warm weather prompted a last-minute camping trip to the coast. Keen to avoid the strongest sunshine, she planned to spend the day enjoying a walk around the town while keeping cool in the shade. Cathy and Robert have been enjoying a 3-day break in Cromer with their dog, who has been making the most of the weather with plenty of drinks and swims in the sea. Before heading home, the couple plan to visit the famous pier and treat themselves to an ice cream. Adam Masters from Glyde Surf School said, "As the sun comes out, the waves normally get a little smaller, but even today we have a little bit of surf, so we are doing highers all day. The sunshine brings people to the beach. Regardless of the conditions, we have something for everyone to enjoy their time at the beach." Katie from Leicestershire was among those making the most of the conditions by renting a surfboard. She said, "My parents have a caravan here, so we come here often and we try and get into the water as much as we can." Nick and Maureen Neild were also enjoying the day. They said, "We love being so close to Cromer that we can come on these wonderful sunny days. We started with a nice iced latte and now we're going to mooch around the town and enjoy the sun. We're always enjoying the nice sea breeze keeping us cool and the fantastic pier, 125 years old." Walking around Cromer, it was clear the 31-degree heat wave had brought the town to life. Families enjoyed ice creams and coffees, swimmers cooled off in the sea, and visitors packed the promenade, all making the most of a glorious summer day by the coast.
Work is set to start on turning Cromer's former tourist information centre into a new dentist's surgery. The conversion is expected to be completed in the autumn, and once finished, it will include 5 surgery rooms offering NHS appointments. The tourist centre was closed last year as part of cost-saving measures by North Norfolk District Council. 8 businesses showed interest in the site, with proposals including a bakery, cafe, osteopath and real ale pub. The dental provider was selected due to it being the best move financially. The council approved the plans, which are expected to create 14 jobs, including 6 dentists offering both NHS and private services. Dental Design Studio submitted the application earlier this year. Plans show the main consulting and technical areas will be located in the building's distinctive rotunda. The ground floor will include 3 consulting rooms and an X-ray room. 2 additional consulting rooms, along with a decontamination and preparation room, will be built on the first floor within the rotunda. A planning statement said it will bring a much-needed service to Cromer and retain the character of a landmark building.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, a tablet or a computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a phone call to listen. Find out the details on your website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you your new editions each week. So please remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was Richard Wilson. Editing and producing this issue was Rick Waghorn. But do keep listening, as immediately following this edition of The Mardler, you can hear items from the Talking News Federation.
Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's
cheerio! Thank you. TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Charlotte from Guide Dogs, back with another update on what's happening in Buddy Dogs, our support dog scheme for children with sight loss. This month, I've been doing lots of planning for an event that I'm holding in the summer for families who already have a buddy dog, and for families who are considering whether it's right for them. These events are really fun and interactive, with activities for a range of age groups. We hold these events at our guide dog centres and have tables with different activities set up so the families can choose what they'd like to do. My favourite activity is dog treat making. We ask the children to weigh out flour using talking scales, then peel and mash a banana into the mix and crack an egg in. They then have to spoon the mixture into moulds ready to be microwaved. We bag up the treats and the child can take them home for their dog or donate them to a family with a dog if they don't have their own yet. This is a pretty messy activity and the dogs often want to be quite involved, but it is really fun and gets children interacting with each other. Other activities include teaching their dog a new trick, like a spin or a paw, which helps to improve their bond with their dog, and a sensory treasure hunt that encourages them to use their sense of hearing, touch and smell. These activities can be quite chaotic in a really fun way. Having a big space full of children and dogs comes with its challenges, but we often hear that the children really enjoy and benefit from the interaction, and it's a good way for prospective buddy dog owners to hear some real life experiences. Aside from this, I had several families waiting for matches, so I have been looking at all dogs currently coming out of training in the southwest to see if any were suitable. This month there weren't any dogs leaving training that would have matched my families, but there was a dog that had been removed from the breeding programme. She had been unreceptive to mating and had not conceived in 2 years, but is an otherwise lovely dog and, at 4 years old, would have been too old to begin guide dog training. I felt that she would be a nice match for one of my families who would benefit from a slightly older, calmer dog, as they are a busy family with an active life. We are now waiting for the dog to recover from her spay, but once she is back in full health, I will place her with this family who are really excited to meet her. I am hoping that in the coming weeks I will have a few more suitable dogs so that I can get all of my waiting families matched. Buddy dog matching is typically quite quick. The majority of families will have their dog within 6 months of joining the waiting list. And lastly, I have done a few visits to see families who have a buddy dog but need a hand with some training. One such visit was to a family with an excitable golden retriever who was greeting strangers too enthusiastically on walks. I never turn down an opportunity to work directly in behaviour management due to my history as a guide dog trainer, so I really enjoyed joining the family on a walk and giving them tips on how to manage and correct their dog's lunging and jumping. We were already seeing improvements by the end of the walk, and the parents were feeling much more confident to manage their dog's behaviour, as well as walking safely with their two children. A big part of being in the buddy dog team is providing ongoing support to families in order to get the best possible behaviour from the dog, and it's an aspect of the job that I really love. That's all from me now. I'll be back soon with more tales from guide dogs.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I call them Cabin Conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin Conversations about World Chocolate Day. This annual celebration possibly has the oldest roots, dating from July 1528, when conquistador and explorer Hernan Cortes brought the first viable cocoa beans back by ship to Spain from the Aztec Emperor Montezuma II of Mexico, Southern America. Yet the observance of World Chocolate Day on the 7th of July globally was only chosen in 2009 due to social media pressure. A bit like the Dubai pistachio-filled chocolate bars, which started a worldwide viral media trend 2 years ago. Millions of people suddenly wanted it. Although other chocolate recognition days do exist, internationally and locally, with many countries choosing different calendar dates. Despite Cortés being credited with introducing chocolate to Spain and endorsing its health benefits as the divine drink which builds up resistance and fights fatigue, the people had to still improve the bitter, watered-down bean juice by adding cane sugar and mellow spices such as nutmeg or vanilla essence to create a more palatable drinking experience. The Italian explorer Christopher Columbus actually brought the very first cocoa beans to Europe earlier in 1492 on discovering the Americas, though failed to promote any real interest in the drink. Indeed, Spain quickly found its citizens addicted to chocolate, something reflected in the growing consumption statistics today. The top five countries are America, fast approaching 390,000 tons of chocolate annually. Second, Germany. Third, France. Fourth, UK, with Cadbury's brand showing the top 73% of sales in 2025. And lastly, Italy in fifth place. So who did invent the first chocolate bar? It was the UK company J.S. Fry and Sons, previously pharmacy owners, who purchased a reputable chocolate company based in Bristol and made the very first chocolate bar in 1847. Roundtrees of York won the prize medal at the Yorkshire Fine Art and Industrial Exhibition in 1866 for their rock cocoa, and this became a staple product at their works. Cadbury's of Birmingham were awarded the Royal Warrant from Queen Victoria. Indeed, during the Boer War in 1866, the Royals sent out a bar of chocolate to every soldier. Though Cadbury's made their true mark in 1868 with chocolate assortments, popularised in fancy boxes. However, 7 years later, the Swiss company owned by Henri Nestlé managed to perfect milk chocolate, adding the once baby formula sweet condensed milk to the processed Dutch bitter cocoa powder. In fact, Nestlé produced a world premiere white chocolate too in 1936 and still available today. They bought out Roundtree's in 1988 and now own such classics as Smarties, Aero and Kit Kat. Incidentally, the latter was named after a famous mutton pie in the historic Kit Kat Club, London. 1962 was a time of highs and lows for chocolate in the UK. Roundtree's introduced their classic dark chocolate coated wafer thin after 8 mints. The name derived from the clock set to 1 minute past 8 p.m. on the box and aimed at adult indulgence after dinner. Meanwhile, the British government decided to make money from the consumers in a different way, bringing in a 15% purchase tax on chocolate and confectionery, being previously exempt as classified simply as food. There is debate over the most expensive modern-day luxury chocolate. The closest may be La Madeleine aux Truffes, a 70% dark chocolate containing rare French Périgord truffle, made by Danish artisan chocolatier Fritz Kernischild from $250 or £185 per prefer chocolate truffle. What is known, the rarer the chocolate, the higher the price, no matter the quality. For example, a 100-year-old bar of Cadbury's chocolate was auctioned in London for £470 back in 2001 because it was remarkably well preserved and had travelled with Captain Robert Scott on his first expedition to the Antarctic. Surprisingly, the ancient American Aztecs had used cocoa beans as currency, and even faked beans out of clay to fool unwitting traders. Speaking of fraud, apparently due to the world crisis both environmentally and economically, chocolate has become a tempting commodity for criminals. One supermarket told the BBC that chocolate theft cost it £250,000 in 1 year. Of course, chocolate is not just for eating or drinking. It has many other unusual applications as well. Luxurious spa treatments paint on chocolate to enhance hydration and nourishment of the skin while lifting the client's mood. In the film industry, they have used chocolate syrup to make fake blood. And the University of Warwick successfully fuelled a Formula 3 racing car on a mixture of waste chocolate and vegetable oil. In addition to these initiatives, chocolate has inspired many a location, from hotels like the Chocolate Box Hotel Bournemouth, with themed rooms, workshops and tasting sessions, or chocolate tours, such as York's Chocolate Story Truffle Rolling Tour and the Chocolatarium Tour Experience Edinburgh, making edible souvenirs. Visitor attractions include the Chocolate Museum in London, with virtual online access and outreach chocolate workshops, and Cadbury World, with its £8 million Cadbury Quest Adventure Ride. Bay chocolate, whether drinking, eating, baking, or exploring, be a sustainable sweet treat for you in the best way.
Hello, it's Tina here. I have a crossword for you. There are just 6 words in the crossword, and each one has 5 letters. Let's start with the across clues and the top word, one across. The clue is produce offspring. Now the word through the middle, 4 across, shine dazzlingly. And 5 across, that's along the bottom, comes between yesterday and tomorrow. Now let's go to the down clues. One down on the left-hand side, sense of seeing. 2 down through the middle, a recognition of achievement. And 3 down on the right-hand side, requiring support. I'll give you the answers shortly. Hello, it's Tina back here again, and I have your crossword answers. The across clues first. One across, along the top. Produce offspring, we have spawn, S-P-A-W-N. 4 across, through the middle, shine dazzlingly, we have glare. And 5 across, comes between yesterday and tomorrow, gives us today. Now the down answers. One down, on the left-hand side, sense of seeing is sight. 2 down through the middle, a recognition of achievement gives us award. And 3 down on the right hand side, requiring support, the answer is needy. Did you manage to get all 6 words there? Well done if you did.
TNS Soundings.